good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, he didn't cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade, which means distant thunder. Hey, Cudahy Weena, to all my friends and relatives in four directions, you are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We discuss local and national Native news and events. And as you know, Haley, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, we have our friend Robert Lilligren from Native American Community Development Institute, the CEO and president, and we have him on co-hosting tonight, and we're excited to put Robert to work, and he does a great job. And Haley, do you remember the guest that Robert had on that I was butthurt about, that I go, wow, he's got a better show than I do? What, do you remember the guest?
Oh, yeah. No, I think that was Minneapolis Parks and Rec Board member Carrie Day Aspinwall. Was that who that was?
It could have been Carrie, Haley. She's a good friend. She's not on the Minneapolis Parks and Rec Board, but she works for
the board. Oh, okay. There we go. Yes, my mistake.
I you do a great job for us here, and we really appreciate you. And we're going to have the governor of Wisconsin jump in here in a second, but we also have Robert with his guest, Kate Cashman, who is city council member. And Robert had a lot to do with mentoring this young new city council person, and we're excited to hear that discussion. But before we get any farther into this, why don't we take a quick listen to the governor of the great state of Wisconsin, Governor
Evers. Hey there, Native Roots Radio. Governor Tony Evers here with my weekly update. Folks, in July, I signed the 2023-25 biennial budget into law, and in doing so, approved a $125 million investment, the first real meaningful investment Republicans have sent to my desk to address and prevent PFAS contamination statewide. Now, more than 250 days later, the Republican-controlled Budget Committee has refused to release these funds and have ignored my repeated requests over the past 8 months to do so. In fact, the GOP-controlled Budget Committee met again this week, but releasing the funding that we already agreed upon and approved more than 250 days ago wasn't on the agenda. Also not on the agenda was releasing $15 million in funding to stabilize health care in western Wisconsin in the wake of the recent announcement of HSHS and Prevea Health's decision to close several locations. This $15 million investment would help ensure folks in western Wisconsin could access the health care they need when and where they need it, including OBGYN services, mental health and substance use treatment, urgent care, and so much more. You heard that correctly, folks. A total of $140 million in already approved and agreed upon investments meant to address pressing issues facing Wisconsin today are sitting here in Madison because Republicans refuse to release them. To say that's breathtaking is an understatement. Wisconsinites should not have to wait any longer than they already have for these funds to be released, especially not when it's putting the health of their families and communities on the line. So I'm once again urging Republican lawmakers to stop playing politics, do the right thing, and release these funds immediately so we can get to work addressing real and pressing challenges facing our state. Thank you. Back to you, Robert, and Native Roots Radio.
Wow, Robert, we really enjoy having a nice little update from the governor of Wisconsin, and you know, crossing both sides of the agenda and doing what's right. And again, we always just say they're so lucky, and we're so lucky to have a Democratic governor over there in our purplish red state neighbor.
I agree. You are very lucky to have him, and I just love how clear he is and about this accountability, right? They're trying to do something good. They put funds behind it. And now the legislators are stalling that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like nationally, like the border and Ukraine and all these things that are happening nationally. It's interesting. The only thing that it seems like we can get a bipartisan thing going on here in our government is I'm a big TikTok fan. I know you don't do too much on it, but it's kind of the young person like myself and Haley. No, I'm just kidding. That watch that. And it's a double-edged sword for me because it's like, well, it's owned by China. But I mean, if they're going to do this to TikTok, they should really be looking into Meta and X and all these other ones too, because they're, we already know what happened in that one race with Trump getting support from Russia and all the misinformation that was going on those other platforms.
Yeah, and there's so much data mining, right, that goes on with not just social media. I mean, if you buy something online, right, all of a sudden your data belongs to everyone. And I know I don't, and I'm guessing most Americans don't really understand how public their data is when they go on any of these sites. You know, now it's TikTok we're focusing on, but as we prepare for the 2024 elections and beyond, you know, so much social media, so much online media is used as a tool for propaganda, right?
And right,
I don't have a clear idea how much of that actually goes on.
Yeah. Well, and I know, like, it's easy to buy. It was really easy to buy ads at one time through Facebook, and they really tightened it up in the next election. And it was like almost like they were tightening it up on the little people like us that you tried to, you know, promote our show and our political thinking, as opposed to these big national or international bots out there that are sending out all this disinformation.
Right. And how can you tell, right? I mean, I've read a few articles lately about how many thousands of fake online profiles are being created just to filter in misinformation in advance of our 2024 elections. So how can we know as just regular people, you know, what's real, what isn't real, how careful we need to be about what our sources are.
Yeah, well, we know where our friend Haley gets her source, so we're really excited about that, Haley.
Oh yeah, my elders.
Right. Listen to your elders, Haley.
Always.
Yeah, she's got her fingers crossed back there. I can see
toes crossed, everything.
Exactly. Well, yeah, and it is going to be the thing of misinformation. And I heard Trump did a double misinformation where they did this a video of all his stammering. I think the Lincoln Project did. And then he said was AI done.
Right, that it was fake. Yeah.
Right.
So I suppose that's going to be one of the big themes of this election cycle. Oh, that's fake. It's AI.
Right.
You know, we've all seen all of those media clips before they were compiled into the into the composite that Trump's objecting to. And yeah, how are we supposed to know, right? If someone says this is AI, how do we know as average news consumers?
Right. And well, one of the primaries, they had an AI Bush or a Biden voice saying, you guys don't need to vote, you know, and all this. And it's like, oh, man.
Oh. Yep, it's a different day. It's a whole different day. Actually, I'm starting to really respect Haley's perspective of listen to your elders. Who else are you going to listen to?
Well, Joe Biden's our elder, and we've talked about this before, where people disrespect him because of his age. But as Native Americans, we listen to our elders.
Exactly.
Right, it's cultural.
Right on. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and I'm here with Robert Lilligren, and we are just talking political stuff. And next segment, ask Robert what he likes, what he would like to talk about. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. My best.
If the statistics say that 1 in 3 Native women and 1 in 6 Native men have experienced sexual assault in their lifetime, it means our whole community is affected by sexual violence. 1 is too many. Don't stand by, stand up. Don't engage in acts of sexual violence and shut down the dirty jokes, the gossip, the victim blaming and shaming. As a community, we can change the way we respond. Contact the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition to attend a workshop to learn more.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Attention transit customers. On Saturday, March 16th, Metro Transit will make changes to transit service within your community. As we do each quarter, we review our resources and ridership trends. These service changes continue our ongoing work to best serve customers throughout our system with our given resources. A summary of the upcoming service changes and a preview of the updated schedules are available now at metrotransit.org.
Hey, if you're like a lot of people, you're probably relieved that the holiday celebrations are over. But there's one thing that might stay with us from the holidays besides all those gifts, and that's COVID-19. Numbers from COVID are going up as we spend more time inside. And Native Americans are seeing even bigger case spikes. With all the indoor celebrations over the holidays, you may have unknowingly been exposed to someone with COVID-19. That's why it's important to stay vigilant. If you notice any symptoms like a fever, a tickle in the throat, or heavy fatigue, take an at-home test. They're still free and can be ordered at sayyeshometest.org. If you do test positive, you're eligible for free treatment, and no health insurance is required. Visit health.state.mn.us to connect with providers and receive your treatment. Let's make 2024 the healthiest year ever, securing a brighter future for our Native community. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Development Institute, or NACD, in Minneapolis.
Hey, we love them, and we love Minneapolis. I just don't live there, but that's another story. Ho-wah.
Same.
We're trying maybe to crack someday, up Robert. But...
You guys, maybe you can achieve.
Yes. Exactly. Well, I have been spending a lot of time over there ever since there's a GPS. I can get around really easy. I was afraid. Well, when
for
I was
me,
young.
I'm a third generation Minneapolis urban Indian. I just live a couple blocks from where my grandmother lived, where my dad grew up. So,
wow,
it's home to me.
Hey, before we get into what's happening here in the Twin Cities and on a Native corridor, I just wanted to. There was a news update here at 4:48 Central Time here. Judge rejects bid by Donald Trump to throw out classified documents case on constitutional grounds. And that's kind of a big deal for a couple reasons. That judge was picked by Trump. And so that's pretty substantial there that they're going to go through with the trial.
Yeah, and you know, there's so many legal proceedings that involve Trump. I mean, it's amazing that he even has time to campaign. And, you know, I keep hoping that the more these cases get elevated, the more sort of authenticity they have, more and more people will become aware of how unsuited he is to lead this nation. And so, fingers crossed.
Yeah, well, we have to do the work like... make voting a tradition and keep everybody moving and grooving, because he's losing constituents. He's not gaining voters by alienating them. And we just got to make sure that we stay engaged and that we don't listen to this misinformation. And again, we were joking about our elders, but I really believe that. I can't remember what a guest of ours brought that up. And I said, yeah, that's right. You know, Biden is an elder. They talk slower. We listen to them. They tell us stories.
Right. Well, I appreciate and I love, Robert, that you brought up Make Voting a Tradition, you know, a project of NACTI that works locally, statewide now, and actually even nationally. It's a project of NACTI, a multi-generational approach to engaging Native families and households in the voting process. You know, we really focus on high school age Native folks who are soon to be voting age and how they can help engage their families, and that Native people as a group, as a family, make their way to the polling places. And we were just kind of parsing out some data that we've gathered through surveys at Make Voting a Tradition, and how important this family connection is for Native people in getting to the polls. I vote because my parents tell me to. I vote because my wife makes me. These mm-hmm. are some of the responses that we're getting, and I just love them. Voting should be a family affair, right?
Well, and I like that you're speaking to the young ones, because we joke about it. We're roughly the same age, but I haven't missed an election since Reagan and Jimmy Carter. And if you start voting as a young person, you're more likely to vote forever.
You are exactly right. If someone votes when they're 18 or as soon as they can, they are so statistically so much more likely to continue voting throughout their lives. You're exactly right. And that's what I did. I remember my mom used to take me to the polls when she went to vote, you know, as a little kid. So to me, it just mm-hmm. became kind of a normal thing. And so we have to normalize that, right, for our whole community.
Yeah, I couldn't wait to vote because my dad was a big union person, and he was totally involved in that. And it's funny, catty corner from our house was a Jewish synagogue in St. Paul, and that's where the voting took place. So we got to go in there and see what was happening in there, and then also vote.
I love it. Yep. I didn't know you were from a union family, Robert. I am as well. Both my parents were former union members. I am a former union member. I suppose mm-hmm. as a teacher, you're probably were a union member as well. But
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and we're old enough to remember, at least my mom, she only had a part-time job because she was bored. But, you know, she was able to stay home with my father's union job. And what has happened to the middle class is no secret after Reagan started union busting in the 80s, mm-hmm. early 80s.
Nope, that's true. And so I'm the sixth of seven kids in my family. So my mom worked outside the home until I was born. And then she stayed at home. But to your point, you know, my dad retired from his union. He was an AFTRA member, American Federation of TV and Radio Announcers, I think. But the fact that my parents had a level of quality of life and of health care because my dad retired from his union was just such a comfort to me, mm-hmm. you know. And so as we move up in our elder years, it's like, well, who's going to take care of me when I get to be that age?
Right. Well, and it's good, too, that somebody – young people like Haley are listening to this, because I've always said this, if I was Gen Z and know what I'm missing, I would be pissed. You know, you're not living as long. You're not going to be able to afford a house. All these things that Gen Z should be applied to, and it isn't. And so there has to be a big shift, and I feel a big shift coming, Robert. I really believe this is going to be an elections, and we're going to sweep the House and the Senate and the President.
I love that. I feel the same way. Let's, you know, work to actualize that, to realize that vision. And but I think, you know, a lot of what you just said, Robert, to me evokes the bigger kinds of themes within our lives, and what priorities should be and what they are. And, you know, we all know that our way of living in the U.S. has really had negative impacts on the land, the air, the mm-hmm. water in our country. And I know this this might not be what you meant exactly, but for me, as we look at solutions to a lot of these damages we've done to our planet, to our society, I feel like indigenous solutions are kind mm-hmm. of the key, right? And it could be indigenous mm-hmm. to this country, to Turtle Island. It could be indigenous to wherever, the mm-hmm. whatever billion people or whatever who are indigenous on this planet. We need to return to these indigenous perspectives, these care for our land, our water, our air, our environment, and to our life ways, right? Mm-hmm. Our family structures, our relationships to the world. And I really feel like, I agree with you. I feel like we're on the threshold. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's the 2024 elections, which of course are critical, and there's life beyond that. And how do we really lift up these indigenous perspectives as solutions to a lot of our global issues?
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's some signposts that show that you're absolutely right that that's happening. And I know you and I talk about how proud we are of a lot of our young ones that know so much more than we did when we were young. You know, I was Italian, but you know what I mean? And so I think there's a touchstone with Standing Rock. When Standing Rock happened, it was a revitalization. And we see that in movies, TV, and a lot of things, but we also see it in Water's life, and our white allies are joining in. And I know John Trudell always used to like to talk about how everybody was from a tribe at one time, and you know, you were colonized, and so I agree with that.
Yep, everyone's indigenous to somewhere, right? And really it has to do with the time distance from when you were colonized.
Right.
So how do we kind of work our way back there? And I know you and I agree on a lot of this, but how do we get others to agree? And talking about allies, I'm looking forward to the second half of the show where I'm guest hosting, and I'll have one of our huge allies, Minneapolis City Council Member Katie Cashman, my city council member and near neighbor who gets a lot of this, right? She's a hardcore environmentalist for real. Right. And how we can repair some of this damage. But I have spent a big part of my day today, so you know, Robert and Haley, dealing with the system, right? Mm-hmm. Dealing with the Minnesota State Arts Board, dealing with our, you know, in conversation with our Hennepin County Commissioner. Next, it'll be with our city council member, and just continually lifting up the indigenous perspectives and the importance of having native voices involved in policymaking.
Wow. Right on. And thank goodness. And I've had conversations lately or recently with colleagues and people that know you, and we kind of say, thank God for Robert Lilligren. We joke about all the groups that you're involved with, but wow, you're pulled up to chair and you're doing it for us. And so we appreciate that. And now I'm going to make you work even harder. I'm going to take off. I have a meeting up next, Robert Lilligren of Native Roots Radio. We got to get you another t-shirt. Ho-wa.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
This portion of the show is supported by All My Relations Arts and their current gallery exhibit, Okeezy, in partnership with the American Swedish Institute, now until April 13th, off of Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis.
Great. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio. I'm Robert Lilligren, now guest hosting for Robert Pilot, who has some responsibilities he needs to attend to as an elected official of the Ho-Chunk Nation. So I'm thrilled to step in and help out. I'm thrilled to be joined by our guest, is Minneapolis City Council Member Katie Cashman. Katie, it looks like you're in your City Hall office right now.
I am.
Hard at work on our behalf. Welcome. Yes. I'll let our listeners know, Councilmember Cashman, Katie is my city council member, very near neighbor. She just lives around the corner from me and a great ally for the Native community. So thanks so much for joining us today, Katie.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, I hope I can call you Katie and not council member in this forum.
Absolutely. And Robert, I consider you a friend as well and a mentor to me. So
I love it. Thank you so much for
everything that you've been helping me navigate as a new council member with just two months in on the job so far.
Yeah, you're doing a great job and I appreciate it. And we'll get to some of the recent actions of the Minneapolis City Council that I know you want to talk about. But I was telling Robert Pilot earlier, Katie, that I've spent my day kind of engaged with government, mm-hmm. but at the state level, at the county level, the Minneapolis Parks and Rec Board and everything, mm-hmm. and trying to build through NACTI a sort of a more equitable system that acknowledges Native voices. So I'll try not to take my frustrations out on you, Katie.
Yeah, how is it going? How are your conversations today?
You know, all in all, it's going pretty well. Okay. And my organization, Native American Community Development Institute, is working with the Park Board to do open space planning in the East Phillips neighborhood here in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. which has the highest concentration of Native residents. We're working with the county. We have an urban farm on county property right by the Midtown Greenway, which is a bike freeway that goes through all of South Minneapolis. And so how discussing with Commissioner Hennepin County Commissioner Angela Connolly how they can continue to support our work, and then working with the State Arts Board, which is always a bit of a challenge, trying to educate the State Arts Board on how at a Native community development organization like NACTI, we don't separate things. Art isn't separate from community, isn't separate from food sovereignty. Mm-hmm. So it's always a bit of an education.
Yeah. But
I appreciate your partnership and allyship in the work.
Arts advocacy is never easy. It doesn't get as much funding, as much attention. And these are artists, our community members who bring so much.
You're exactly right. I appreciate you saying that, Katie. And there's a big movement within Native art circles to direct public funding to Native artists, Native arts orgs, sort of separate from the bureaucracy of the state, mm-hmm. or the region. And there's been some success, but it's an ongoing battle.
Mm-hmm. And in Minneapolis, it really helps, I think, with like placemaking and helping people understand and connect to the land. Because when you live in a city, sometimes you get to feel anonymous. You know, the street names and the grid structure, it's like you don't really notice what kind of tree I'm passing by or what's the history of the Loring Park pond and like who has been using this water for generations. And you just miss all of that unless an artist steps in and tells you, you know, there's a lot of meaning here.
Great point, Katie. And Loring Park that Katie's referring to, for people who aren't in Minneapolis, is our most significant urban park. It's in Katie's ward, the area she represents, but it's also been the hub of the urban Indian population here for generations. In fact, my grandmother lived here, my dad lived here, as I said earlier, but and the city of Minneapolis itself continues to have the imprint of the Dakota and other Native communities that were here before colonization, and you see it everywhere. So I really appreciate your lifting that up.
Yeah, just amazing to think about the Loring Park Pond, which is a natural water body. It's not something that was, you know, dug out. It's a natural water body. And to think of that as it was a bison drinking hole, actually. Mm-hmm. And I just learned that. And I, you know, grew up in Minneapolis my whole life. Like, where was that history lesson?
Right, right. Why didn't I learn that? And yeah, good point. And even like our major thoroughfares here, right, our streets. Hennepin Avenue, Lindale Avenue, Franklin, Lake Street. You can tell that those were originally footpaths, right? From the river to the lakes, or from the falls to the river and things that will still persist. And you're right, Katie, we don't learn about that.
Yeah.
So I appreciate your perspective in a big way. And for listeners from outside of Minneapolis who may not know, I served for 12 years on the Minneapolis City Council. I was the first Native member ever elected to that body. And so I love seeing young people like Katie come up who have an awareness. And I appreciate your calling me a friend. I consider you a friend and a mentor. And as you know, anything I can do to support you to be successful in your role contributes to the success of the whole city.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you mentioned the governance issues that you've been working on today, because it's super important that, you know, at local government, we really depend on support from the county and from the Met Council and from the state. And we all have to be in conversation and working together to deliver resources for residents. And sometimes, you know, as a council member, we are, it feels like the front line. That's the first person that a neighbor will call when they have an issue or, you know, they're trying to figure out how to navigate government. And it's actually quite hard to tell them, well, that's not our jurisdiction. That's actually the county that manages that road or that space. Or that's the park board's land and we don't have any control over it. And so every time I get to work with like county commissioners or park board representatives or you as our MAC council member to say that we're actually in conversation, that we're working together, we're not just like siloed out different government entities that just point the finger to someone else and say, go talk to somebody else.
I love that perspective. Thanks, Katie. And I was pretty naive when I was first elected to office. And I thought that government was this kind of unified thing that was working together for my benefit. And it was really startling to learn how many divisions there are and how siloed authorities are and how much conflict there can be between different jurisdictions of government. So I just appreciate so much, you know, your perspective of trying to unify all of that for the good of your constituents. So thank you.
Yeah, it's important for representatives. And I think for me, just to be like present and accessible to residents so they, you know, everybody feels like they have access to somebody who can help them out. I think Minnesota is one of those better government states, I would say. And I want Minneapolis to be like the best government in the country too, where we're actually transparent and accountable and present and hopefully down to earth too, in a way that is relatable to, you know, your any neighbor in the city.
I love that. And I do think there's the sense in Minneapolis and in Minnesota in general, that there's an expectation that residents engage with their government, engage with the sort of social infrastructure to make Minnesota and Minneapolis a better place for everyone. And in my experience, that expectation is set, and sometimes the tools or the mechanisms for realizing that engagement are sort of withheld from communities. And that's one other reason I really appreciate your perspective of seeking to engage people. I have found you as to be very accessible elective representative, but to acknowledge that, you know, maybe Native people or Black people or groups that have been damaged by our government aren't really there for engaging with it. And so we have to make special consideration. We have to figure out how to best engage these communities that have been deliberately disenfranchised. And so I appreciate your efforts and your perspective.
Absolutely. Like, how do you rebuild trust with groups that have been hurt and who have been really like sidelined and even worse in the past? They don't necessarily want to reach out to government because they don't have the trust there. So we have to be proactive and go to them instead of just asking them to come to us. And another group I'll add to that is like renters, and representing like downtown Minneapolis. We have a lot of high-rise buildings, people who might have just moved here from another state or from another city or who are from a rural area, and their touch point in Minneapolis is where they live. But, you know, they might not be as easily connected as homeowners to like the system. So we're trying to find ways to be proactive with people who live in apartments to make sure that they're included too.
I love that commitment to inclusion that you have, Katie. And I will note that in Minneapolis, over half of the households are renter households, and that you yourself, Katie, are a renter here mm-hmm. in the community. And historically, the Minneapolis City Council has been populated with homeowners.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so you're really bringing forward the majority perspective, actually, in Minneapolis, but there's always this kind of blanket sense that renters don't have as much invested or committed into our communities. And I think that's false. Everybody wants to live in a safe and nice community.
Yeah. And we pay property taxes too. We pay it in our rent. So,
right.
You know, we are contributing economically as well.
Right. I think that's wonderful. And thanks. What are you doing in City Hall so late today, if you don't mind my asking, Katie?
Yeah, well, I, before talking with you, I was talking to a student reporter at the University of Minnesota, and she's doing a story on the Climate Legacy Initiative that passed this year. It's our $10 million investment in climate action at the city, something that I'm just a proud champion of from before I was on the council, and now as the chair of our Climate Infrastructure Committee, leading that work is really meaningful to me. And the $10 million investment includes weatherization of buildings, it includes green workforce training, and it includes investments in our tree canopy for climate resilience. So that's what I've been working on this afternoon.
I love it. And I know this is a specialty area for you, and maybe in our next segment, we can go a little deeper into that work and especially how it relates to the native communities, but I appreciate your advocacy on that and just your knowledge and awareness and how you're having influence on what happens here in Minneapolis around mm-hmm. climate, which we know impacts poorer, browner people. The climate change impacts more than it impacts the broader community. So I look forward to further conversation on that. Mm-hmm. And just to remind folks, we're here with Minneapolis City Council member Katie Cashman, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Attention transit customers. On Saturday, March 16th, Metro Transit will make changes to transit service within your community. As we do each quarter, we review our resources and ridership trends. These service changes continue our ongoing work to best serve customers throughout our system with our given resources. A summary of the upcoming service changes and a preview of the updated schedules are available now at metrotransit.org.
Life can be hectic. Sometimes the pressure can feel like too much, and the emotions can be overwhelming. Hennepin County's COPE Mobile Crisis Response is here to listen and help you find a way through whatever is going on in your life. Call 612-596-1223. For no-cost crisis support anytime, anywhere in Hennepin County. That number is 612-596-1223.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Ah! this portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations. Howl! Good one, Robert.
Jesus, I warned you we were going to howl.
That took me by surprise, I'm not going to lie.
Next time. Well, thanks, Haley, for your support. In this, I'm Robert Lilligren from Native American Community Development Institute. I am substitute hosting for Robert Pilot, who has some obligations as a Ho-Chunk elected representative. And we're here with Minneapolis City Council member Katie Cashman, my city council member, and a great ally. So thanks so much for making time to be with us, Katie. Much appreciated. And there's been a lot of Native kind of news roiling. Some of it has to do with land back. That was some of my conversations with the Minneapolis Park and Rec Board recently are about land back issues. We have a high profile conversation going on in our state about forest land being returned to Native control through White Earth. White Earth Nation, of which I'm a citizen. There's also conversation about a big part of Red Lake being returned to control of the Red Lake Nation in northern Minnesota. And then more locally, there's a lot of conversation about climate. Mm-hmm. Katie, I know this is a huge area of work for you, of knowledge, and you're a great advocate. And federally, folks might have noticed that there was just, $120 million of federal funds through the Department of the Interior, where Native Commissioner or Secretary Deb Haaland leads that effort to fight climate-related threats. And those are very reservation-focused. And so, Katie, you represent a sizable Native population, and the city of Minneapolis has a sizable Native population as well that isn't really captured within those kinds of federal allocations. And so I'm wondering if you could just talk a little, please, about your efforts to address climate change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, if we actually kind of step back a little bit and think about the causes of climate change and some of the impacts, it is the wealthier interests and big corporations, big oil, big gas that are causing this pollution. So it's important that we're holding them accountable. And so I'm excited to be leading efforts with our clean energy partnership that we have as a city with XL Energy and CenterPoint Energy, getting them to the table and making sure that their commitments on reducing pollution and achieving a net zero future are coming to fruition, and that we're capturing those investments in clean energy for our citizens, for our population. And we'll also be negotiating our franchise agreements with utilities this year. So that's a once every 10 year opportunity to create some clean energy accountability metrics for them before we grant them access to our public right-of-way, like all of the underground of our streets and infrastructure. If we're allowing, you know, CenterPoint and XL to install there, what are they going to be doing for us to be cleaning up the greenhouse gas pollution that we're experiencing? And then you mentioned that like lower income and BIPOC communities are the heaviest hit by climate impacts. And we see that with impacts such as the urban heat island effect, I think is really important to note. So that is when you don't have as much green space, and we know that neighborhoods that have a higher concentration of lower income or BIPOC residents don't have as much greenery. Mm-hmm. That means that the extreme heat and the drought that we experience in the summer because of climate change is actually causing heat stroke, asthma, other health impacts to those communities. So you do see a lot of disparity in Minneapolis of who has access to green space and whose neighborhoods are experiencing the urban heat island effect. And that's just one of the impacts of climate change. That's based on hotter summers and drought, but we're also seeing higher risk of floods, increased precipitation, extreme weather events, and all of those impacts are harder on neighborhoods that don't have as resilient of infrastructure. So I am so glad that the city and like our leadership are very aware of this. We're not starting from zero, but there's so much more that we need to do to make sure that our climate action investments are really going to environmental justice communities. And we have in Minneapolis, the green zones are two designated areas of the city that we are directing our investments to those areas to make sure that those populations receive them.
I love that. And so folks know green zones, there's a sort of a North Minneapolis and a South Minneapolis designated geographic area of green zones. The South Minneapolis area really includes the majority of Native residents here in our city and Native communities. And so that's both climate impact mitigation plus economic investment around a green economy. So I appreciate your advocacy there. And I love, Katie, that you're talking about the franchise agreement. And boy, I bet it was 20 years ago now or so, 15 or so, when I was on the city council that we really broke open the franchise agreements with utilities. And, and as Katie said, those are the agreements that allow utilities like our gas and electric to use the public right of way for their facilities, power lines, underground lines and things. And it was a little bit of a new conversation back then because franchise agreements weren't viewed as tools to address other community needs. And I learned a lot during that conversation, and we really opened up the city of Minneapolis franchise agreements with the utilities to doing what you're talking about now. And so it's thrilling for me to hear about your continuing that kind of work with the utilities. So well done.
Yeah, there's so much new technology too now that like I'm really excited about clean heat, some of the new renewable energy batteries that are coming onto the market, even like an iron-based battery versus a lithium battery. So if you think of the mining impacts of that technology, and district energy solutions, you know, are really exciting to me, geothermal. So we have a lot of work to be done, but now is the moment to do it. You mentioned, I think, the Inflation Reduction Act and a lot of investments from our federal government. So we got to capture that funding right now.
I love it. And please let me know if I can be helpful in that area. And just to note that because of the work that policymakers have done here, our utilities do work directly with very grassroots kinds of energy advocacy organizations, organizations promoting solar installations on residential properties, and things like that. So I just want to really lift up how important it is for us to have allies like you, Katie, in these decision-making positions as we're moving into these important negotiations.
Yeah, and expanding the conversation, what can we achieve, right?
Right. So very well done. I look forward to supporting you throughout what I hope will be a long and successful political career for you, Katie. And I really appreciate your being here today and making time to talk to the Native Roots Radio audience.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me. Nice to see you too, Haley, as well. Thank you so much.
And thanks, Katie. Night. Great to see you.
Great.
You too. Thanks. Hey, you've been listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. We'll be back tomorrow with Minnesota State Senator Mary Kunish. We need to resist, divest, join a group, and run for office, and free Leonard Peltier now.